welcome in to our weekday afternoon news show, FYI Politics, with Brett Johnson. Glad to have you with us. Also joined by Sam Turnberg on the other side of the production glass. Sam, as we've been locked inside for the most part with our stay-at-home order, have you gotten into any shows like on Netflix or Hulu or any of those streaming services?
My partner and I did the whole Tiger King thing.
Oh, no. I can't do Tiger King.
It was pretty interesting, actually.
Really?
I still am more of a YouTube channel watcher than I am a TV watcher. And one of the YouTube channels I watch is a legal channel. He's a lawyer, and he just breaks down lots of pop culture from a legal sense of view. And he just did a video that I watched yesterday on legally breaking down Tiger King and all. It's pretty, I almost like his interpretation of it. I mean, I'm a big fan of his channel, so. But
It's almost sparked an entire industry responding to what's been on Tiger King, breaking down, as you're talking about what happened on that show. Yeah, they certainly know how to make those types of hits, because they originally had, I think the first big hit they had like that, which turned into a cultural phenomenon on Netflix, would probably be, was it Making a Murder, the name of that show, where they were talking about that guy in Wisconsin, I think?
Yeah, I didn't watch that one, but I remember everybody was all up about that one too, right?
Yeah, that seemed to be the first really big hit they made that turned into that big thing that everyone was watching. I know they've had a couple others, but certainly Tiger King has been the most recent one. And I can't do those shows. Anything true crime, I know that's a big podcast genre, but I can't do true crime, whether that's a podcast or a TV show or internet show or anything like that. I just can't.
I'm going to claim it to be work-related. It's research, because it's political, because I don't know if you've heard, but Joe Exotic is seeking a pardon from Trump, and Trump is considering
I've heard that, yeah.
He's genuinely considering it.
And you know why he's considering that is apparently his kids are very much, that would be Trump Jr. and, I'm blanking on who the other kid's name is.
Don?
Don.
Oh, wait, no, that's Trump Jr. Don, that's the same person, right?
It's Don Jr. Yeah. And who's the other brother? Why are you totally blanking on who his brother is?
Either.
The two Trump sons. Yeah, that's terrible that we don't know the name of Donald Trump's other kid. But either way, yeah, they were very much involved in the exotic hunting industry. So maybe that's why
Eric Trump.
Eric Trump. Yeah, I don't know why we couldn't think of that name briefly. But yeah, those two guys were very much involved in that. I'll tell you one show I did get involved in watching last night, and this is more for nostalgia purposes, has nothing to do with politics, but ESPN released their Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary, a 10-part series. And what I find interesting about this is that if you go back to the Chicago Bulls 1997-1998 season, that was the last season the Bulls were in existence under that form of having Michael Jordan and Dennis Rodman, Scottie Pippen, and all those guys, is that apparently during that season, Michael Jordan allowed a documentary crew to follow the team throughout the entire season. But it wasn't until 2016 he allowed that footage to be released, because part of that agreement was that, well, you can film us, but you're not going to be able to release any of that footage until Michael Jordan says so. A few years ago, he finally agreed to do that, and that's led to this big documentary. And I watched the first part last night, and it was funny to see how much of a mess the Chicago Bulls were before Michael Jordan showed up. He described them, or at least agreed with a newspaper assessment, that when they wrote about the Chicago Bulls when he showed up, they were basically a traveling cocaine circus. And Jordan largely agreed with that and said, yeah, I'm not partaking in that, and started to change the culture of that franchise. But yeah, that team was certainly like the Beatles of the 1990s, and the essence of that was certainly captured in that documentary. So I've certainly been watching that, trying to read some books as well, and also going outside and biking on lots of trails as we're stuck with this stay-at-home order. All right, coming up on the show today, I have lots of news stories to get to, and I actually have 5 good news stories to pass along to you related to COVID-19. Well, some of them are better news stories than other. A few of them are kind of mixed good news / bad news stories. Also, we'll be talking about cronyism. Democrats suck at negotiating. We've probably been well aware of that for a while. We'll have a few non-COVID related local stories. And then at the end of the show, I want to talk about this Joe Biden poll that was just released. This is by far, I think, the most interesting 2020 election cycle poll I have seen. And we're going to get to that probably towards the end of the show, because I think it could really give us some insight of how people might end up voting in 2020. But first, let's start off with our stats on COVID-19 in Minnesota. Confirmed cases are at 2,470. That is an increase from 2,356 yesterday. We did have 9 additional deaths. That's 143 up from the previous total of 134. Total hospitalizations are at 602. That's an increase from 574. People still remaining in the hospital is at 237. That's an increase of 9 from yesterday. Patients in the ICU are currently at 126. That's an increase of 10, while patient recoveries are at 1,202. That is an increase of 42 from yesterday's results. So those are the latest stats on COVID-19. Now, the Minnesota Department of Health gave an interview about this to the Minnesota News Network, who we sometimes cite on the show. They occasionally will do our bottom-of-the-hour newscasts, and they were showing some preliminary data that is quite concerning for people who are suffering from illnesses that aren't the coronavirus and COVID-19. And they have some pretty alarming stats that are talking about people who might be suffering from heart attack-like symptoms or even stroke-like symptoms and not going to the emergency room when they probably should. So Al Tsai is an epidemiologist with the stroke program at the Minnesota Department of Health, and he says his department's analysis shows that the monthly average number of patients they get for stroke patients visiting Twin Cities hospitals is down roughly 15%. Also, Dr. Haitham Hussein, who is a neurologist with Regions Hospital in St. Paul, says their stroke-related visits went down from 70 in January to only 25 in March. And he brings up, well, the obvious concerns for not visiting the ER if you are suffering stroke-like symptoms, being that, well, if you don't go to the hospital, basically a second wave you could have with stroke ends up with symptoms that are a lot worse and could lead to some permanent damage. They also reported that the Minnesota Department of Health that they've been seeing a decline in people going to the ER because of heart attack-related symptoms, so that's certainly not good. And I would get people's concerns about hesitating visiting a hospital, being that you certainly don't want to catch the coronavirus, but obviously when you have symptoms that could indicate a stroke or a heart attack, yeah, you probably want to go to the ER. But yeah, it certainly does put you in a tough position, though. All right, let's get to the good news stories for today, or the somewhat good news stories. I was kind of grasping for straws at some of these, so bear with me. I was trying to find some good news. Every day I'm on, I'm usually reporting on bad news we have with the coronavirus and COVID-19, so I made an effort to at least try to find some good news stories. Here's our first one. We mentioned this a little bit last week after one of the press conferences that Governor Tim Walz gave, and that is that coming up this Saturday from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m., local fire stations are going to be accepting donations for homemade masks. So make sure if you are good at making any of those homemade masks that if you have an extra supply, yeah, drop those off at your local fire stations this Saturday from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. By the way, that is not a skill I possess. I don't know how to sew, and any mask I would make would probably not be very helpful whatsoever. Sam, do you have any sewing skills? Would you be good at making a homemade mask, or are you in the same boat as me?
I don't know how to. I feel like I could learn, but I know my partner and my mom both know how to do stuff like that, and they've done some. So
you're covered, yeah. I'll even admit my mom made me a couple of homemade masks. I have 3 of them that I can rotate through. But you're right. I mean, if I really put my mind to it and watched a few YouTube videos, I could probably figure it out. But it's not a skill I possess.
And yeah, they made one for me that I've been using at Luce when I deliver, so.
Oh, do you wear that all the time when you're delivering?
When I deliver, I feel like it's better. It's hard because it is kind of a thicker fabric, and with my glasses, they fog up, so it is kind of tricky. Like, but I feel like it's better than nothing to stop spreading it to others. It's not going to protect me, but to stop me from, in case I have anything.
Right. It will give you a little bit of protection. At least the stats I've seen is that you maybe have like a 25% smaller chance of catching the coronavirus if you're around someone and you're wearing a mask. So it does maybe do a little bit of good. But as you said, the main thing is from protecting other people from potentially catching the coronavirus in case you're asymptomatic at the time.
About half my coworkers are wearing it, so I think that makes a difference when half of us are there wearing them. And I mean, if everybody, but it's not mandatory, but with half of us wearing them, and again, if everybody wore them, I think that would be where really it's less, I mean, it is protecting you a little bit, but if we're all stopping spreading ourselves, that's really going to, again, it's still, even with that, it's not going to be perfect, but that really minimizes that spread. And along with washing your hands and everything, you can't get rid of that.
Yeah. When I'm at work, like right now, I'm not wearing a mask, and that's mostly because, well, I'm usually the only person here most weekdays since a lot of our staff is working remotely, and you and I are certainly on opposite sides of the production glass.
So we have our own rooms.
Yeah, we have our own rooms, so we're largely covered. But, yeah, I definitely do wear my mask when I'm out grocery shopping, which I try to do as infrequently as possible. And that leads me to our second good news story, Cub Foods. My grocery store, at least. Turns out I go to the same store Matt McNeil actually goes to, which I didn't know. Although I go at different times than him. He goes Thursday mornings. I'm more of a late night shopper.
Should we do a live broadcast from the grocery store?
From the Cub Foods up there on Blake Road, located by the Knollwood area, right? But here's the somewhat good news from Cub Foods. They have announced that they are going to be having 11 additional stores that are going to be open for 24 hours. Because, well, prior to this weekend, they only had a handful of stores that were open 24 hours. I think the only one in the West Metro was the Cub Foods out there in Chanhassen. But they are having extended hours and 24-hour service at locations in Apple Valley, on Lindale Avenue in Bloomington, and Plymouth. In fact, they made those changes yesterday. And then this coming weekend, they have stores in Bloomington, also Valley West, Eden Prairie, the Knollwood St. Louis Park location. They have one in West St. Paul and Woodbury that will be added to the list. Then Brooklyn Park and St. Anthony will be extending their hours in a few weeks, which I find to be a good idea because I would think if you're out grocery shopping, you generally want to spread out when people would be in the store. So I would probably be among some of those people that would go in sort of those off hours to have fewer people in the store. So I certainly get why you would probably cut down on your hours to give your staff more time to disinfect everything. But on the other hand, though, by having extended hours, you will hopefully disperse when people would be visiting the grocery stores. But there you go. If you're a Cub Food shopper, 11 additional stores in the next few weeks going to be adding 24-hour service. Another good news story. This is for, well, especially applying to people who don't currently have health insurance. So normally, if you miss the health insurance deadline to sign up, which is usually late in the year, you're pretty much out of luck for being able to sign up for an insurance plan. Now, generally, you can sign up for one of those emergency plans, but they usually don't do a whole lot of good. But MinSure has announced that they are going to be extending a special qualifying period until tomorrow night at 11:59, which is helpful because you can still enroll in a basic health care plan up until tomorrow at 11:59. And in fact, if you sign up for one of those plans by, again, tomorrow at 11:59, your coverage will actually start retroactive to April 1st. So might want to jump on that if you don't have health insurance and you're in a financial position to be able to afford that. Certainly there are people who aren't in that financial position, which is an entirely different discussion about why we even still have a private insurance health system in the first place, but that's an entirely different topic. Now we're going to move on to some other stories that are sort of good news. Well, actually, this one I would qualify as good news, and this could affect a lot of radio stations and TV stations around the country. So there's this group of bipartisan lawmakers in the U.S. House that called on Sunday for expanding payroll assistance to struggling local newspapers, radio stations, and TV stations that have been seeing a dip in revenue due to the coronavirus pandemic. Senators Maria Cantwell and Amy Klobuchar, our own senator from Minnesota, along with Republicans John Kennedy and John Boozman, urged Senate leaders to revise the rules to make thousands of local newspapers, TV, and radio stations eligible for assistance under the Paycheck Protection Program. Several of them were not eligible during the first part of the CARES Act. And the reason why is, well, several of those local outlets were ineligible because they were owned by parent companies that were too large to qualify, which would be, if you think of the radio industry, that would be like Cumulus or iHeartMedia. So those big corporations owned a number of radio stations, but even though those radio stations were operated largely as small businesses, I'm especially thinking in small towns, they largely weren't eligible for the Paycheck Protection Program because their parent company was too large, at least in the Senate. And they're also doing this in the House as well. They're looking to make an exception for some of those media companies. And at least thankfully here at AM 950, we're not owned by some big parent company. It's Chad Larson, the guy upstairs that owns everything. Not some big parent company, so fortunately we weren't necessarily in need of having that revision to the payroll protection program. But it is kind of funny that you kind of have some of those downsides when you're owned by one of those big parent companies. But it looks like they are going to have some sort of compromise in the CARES Part. I don't know if we call it the CARES Part 2 Act or like the CARES 1.5, but at least that provision looks like it will be making it in there, probably among more corporate giveaways in the next CARES Act bill. Then one final, and this is more of a sort of good news story, although it kind of freaks me out a little bit. So researchers in Grand Forks, North Dakota are testing drones as a way to check people's temperatures from a distance and also use drones to quickly sanitize playgrounds and deliver medical supplies. Now, on the surface, that does seem helpful if you're going to a hospital or a doctor's office to have a drone be able to check your temperature so you don't have to have someone stand near you and check your temperature and have the risk of potentially spreading some sort of illness. But of course, they are still drones, and I would certainly be concerned about privacy issues. This is actually a quote from SkyScope's president, Mark Dunleavy, one of the companies that's been leading some innovations with drones checking people's temperatures. He says this is being done in Australia right now, where the thermal sensors can detect if someone has an elevated body temperature from a distance. But he added researchers are being very careful to protect privacy during their testing. So, yeah, that certainly makes me feel a lot better. By the way, saying that with quite a bit of sarcasm. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Coming up next, we got to talk some cronyism, and then also Democrats, still not very good negotiators, not that we didn't know that already. It's on the way next on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson.
Imagine cyber criminals waiting outside your network, probing for weaknesses. What if you're next? Well, what if you had a team of experts to navigate you through these what-if waters? Hi, Mark Sommerfeld from Rymark with a unique offer, a free network security assessment. We'll uncover the hidden threats to your business and provide you with a map to peace of mind. Call 651-328-8900 or go to RymarkIT.com to schedule your free security assessment and stop drowning in what-ifs.
This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell.
Freddie, this generation of the baby boomers, people are living longer, so the baby boomers are taking care of elderly parents.
Let's talk about your health, and specifically, let's talk about Medicare. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment.
Join us for New Beginnings, Saturday mornings at 11, brought to you in part by Vision Loss Resources.
Hey, it's Brett from FYI Politics. Zero Res understands that to prevent the spread of the coronavirus, the CDC recommends cleaning carpets and hard surfaces where we live and work. And that's what they do best. Their zero contact protocol means their technicians will wear gloves and shoe covers, disinfect all equipment between jobs, and exercise social distancing while cleaning and sanitizing your home. Right now, Zero Res is offering 20% off all surfaces to AM 950 listeners. Call 952-ZERO-RES or visit ZeroResMinnesota.com and make sure you mention AM 950 to get 20% off.
When you need legal assistance, let the Minnesota Lawyer and Referral Information Service help you find the right attorney. It's a new and enhanced program of the Hennepin and Ramsey County Bar Associations. They have professional, experienced referral counselors who can connect you to vetted attorneys practicing in employment, real estate, wills,
taxes, and much more. Take the stress out of finding a lawyer. Call 612-752-6699 or go to mnlawyerreferral.org. The right call for the right lawyer.
Formerly the Audubon Center of the Northwoods, Osprey Wilds is a nonprofit environmental learning center on Grindstone Lake in Sandstone, Minnesota. Osprey Wilds has community events like Dinner at the Lake, Maple Syrup Day, and learning opportunities for all ages. Audit an environmental education college class, snowshoe or ski our trails, or learn about our wildlife programming. We're open to the public year-round. Visit online at OspreyWilds.org. That's OspreyWilds.org.
O'Reilly. This is Derek's O'Reilly Auto Parts story.
After the third time jump-starting my car, I finally realized my battery was dying. So I stopped by O'Reilly to have it checked. They tested it right there in the parking lot. It was bad, real bad. But they helped me find the right battery for my car and even installed it for free. Now my car starts like new.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
So, as you're probably aware, the federal government has been trying to up the amount of N95 masks that they can produce for emergency workers. And you may have heard of this national story over the weekend, and I got to add some comments to this. So, one of the companies that the federal government has contracted to make additional N95 masks is called Panthera Worldwide LLC. Now, there's a number of problems as to why the federal government contracted this company, Panthera Worldwide LLC. Among them is the fact that Panthera Worldwide LLC has been bankrupt since 2018, and they currently have zero employees. Those would certainly be a number of red flags for giving a contract to a company that's bankrupt and doesn't have any employees. And then you add to the fact that this contract calls for Panthera to be making these masks for $5.50, which is a lot more than the contract that 3M currently has to make face masks, which is only about a dollar. So these are roughly five times more expensive than the current N95 masks that are contracted to be made by 3M. Plus, it's being contracted to a company that, like I said, is bankrupt and has no employees. Unbelievable. Now, of course, yeah, you could probably say, well, yeah, they can ramp up their production and hire a bunch of employees. But are they really going to be able to do that within the period of a few weeks or a few months? So, obviously, it's a complete waste of money to be giving this company a federal government contract. And here's the point I want to make about this. Anytime someone goes out there and complains about fraud with welfare or Social Security or Medicaid or anything like this, point out a story like this, how we're giving a federal contract to a company that is making N95 masks for five times more than they usually cost, and then to a company that has no employees and that has been bankrupt since 2018. I would at least say, yeah, if you're going to complain about waste, fraud, and abuse with a welfare system, you need to spend at least as much time, probably more, talking about these things than talking about your fraud with welfare programs. What I mean is not just throwing a little caveat in there saying, well, yeah, this is certainly bad too, but let me go back to talking about why welfare is bad. No, you should be focusing on this at least with 90% of your energy if you're that focused on waste, fraud, and abuse in the government. And if not that story, go back and look at what happened in Iraq back in the 2000s and how we had $12 billion that just disappeared and went missing. Another example of waste, fraud, and abuse from the federal government. If you remember back in, I think it was like 2003 or 2004, we flew in $12 billion worth of shrink-wrapped $100 bills, and we have no idea where any of that money went. See you with that. And then going back to that federal contract talking about these N95 masks. So if anyone ever brings up talking about how there's waste in welfare, and I'm sure there certainly is, be spending your energy talking about these things, not welfare. Because I don't know, Sam, that gets really annoying to me when people say, well, I'm sick of all this waste, fraud, and abuse for welfare. Then you point out something like these N95 mask contracts or the money we lost in Iraq, and they'll say, oh, yeah, well, that's bad, too, just like as a caveat. No, you should be spending at least as much energy and probably more than what you do complaining about welfare, talking about these other fraudulent contracts that the government gives out.
Or even that package that I think it was in the CARES package or everything. The program that was supposed to go to small businesses. I don't know if you mentioned that yet or not, but how that's mostly dried up and many of the small businesses that really needed it didn't get it and it went to pretty larger corporations.
Oh, yeah, there's tons that didn't get it. And then you have that large corporate slush fund, which has, well, it technically has some oversight, but it's already been watered down by the Trump administration. And by the way, this person that's supposed to be overseeing that slush fund doesn't really have any subpoena power. So,
yeah, if we want to talk about, if the Republicans really want to talk about welfare waste, I want to talk about that waste because that's.
Yeah.
Billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars.
Because it's key. When you mention these types of stories to someone who's complaining about waste, fraud, and abuse with welfare, they say, oh, yeah, well, that's certainly bad what you're talking about. I don't think that's good either. But they leave it at that. Then they go right back to complaining about waste, fraud, and abuse with welfare and Medicare and Social Security. You got to be spending as much time talking about those if you're really that upset about welfare fraud as you do talking about these fraudulent government contracts and wasted money on foreign wars and so on and so on.
I'm much less concerned about poor people maybe getting money that they didn't deserve compared to billionaires getting money that they didn't deserve.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, is there some waste, fraud, and abuse with welfare? Yeah, maybe some, but probably not much at all. And we should be spending, if we're really going to be that concerned about this, I'm taking it from a government watchdog position, you should be spending your energy talking about these much bigger stories, like with foreign wars or, as we mentioned, giving a government contract to a company that's been bankrupt for the last 2 years. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. One brief mention of another cronyism-related story before we head to break. You know those protests we saw last week claiming that we should reopen the government? Yeah, turns out, as you probably heard, they weren't these organic protests that they were pretended to be. Turns out that one of the big Facebook groups that was organizing this was run by a guy named Ben Doerr, who is the political director of a group called Minnesota Gun Rights, plus his siblings Christopher and Aaron. So of all people, it was gun rights advocates that were leading these protests, which leads you to think, what exactly does gun rights have to do with reopening the economy? Also got to point this out. Chris O. sent us an email last week. He mentioned, speaking of trying to reopen the economy too early, he said, make sure you remind everybody, the dead don't buy things, which is a very key point when it comes to talking about the economy. It's very tough to participate in the economy when you're dead. All right, we got to take a break, but we'll come on back, have a few non-COVID-related stories. Plus, got to talk about why Democrats need to improve their negotiating skills. That's on the way next on FYI Politics.
Live from St. Paul, it's the Virtual Art Crawl, featuring over 100 local artists with works for sale, artist interviews, demonstration, and studio tours, all from the safety of your sofa. That's right, we had to move the 2020 St. Paul Spring Art Crawl to an online format so that we could connect our fabulous artists with thousands of folks who traditionally attend the first big art event of the year. Help support the arts community by logging on April 24th through the 26th. You may ask yourself, how do I virtually art crawl? Follow the Facebook page at facebook.com/St. Paul Virtual Art Crawl. Watch live streams, support your favorite artists, listen to live streaming music, check out Lower Town restaurants, find a few new artists to follow, and maybe even buy some sweet local art. Again, the Virtual St. Paul Spring Art Crawl is April 24th through the 26th, streaming at facebook.com/St. Paul Virtual Art Crawl.
Hey, it's Brett from FYI Politics, and I want to thank you for listening to AM 950. The advertisers you hear are what allows us to stay on the airwaves, and unfortunately, some of them are going to be going through some tough times with the coronavirus. So support our advertisers in any way you can, whether that's ordering takeout food from one of our Eat Local Minnesota restaurants, purchasing gift cards, or just contacting them and telling them thanks for supporting AM 950. Even the littlest thing you can do can go a long way. Find a full list of our advertisers at am950radio.com. And thanks for listening.
My part-time service in the Army National Guard makes it possible for me to be more for the community I call home. I'm a better neighbor because my service has taught me how important it is to be a team player. My training helps me in my classes when I give attention to detail to the task at hand. My service in the Army National Guard allows me to keep my country safe from threats. Learn more about how you too can live and serve part-time by visiting NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
Hi, this is Mark Bython with Rudy Luther Toyota in Golden Valley. Rudy Luther Toyota remains open to support other essential services, such as medical workers, first responders, and countless others. You can rely on us to take care of vehicle repairs or replacements. We can pick up and deliver your car to keep it going, and you can handle your purchase transaction, mostly online and by phone, to make it easier and safer for you. We are diligent with sanitizing the dealership and your vehicle, and we are 6 feet apart. Please let us know how Rudy Luther Toyota can help at RudyLutherToyota.com.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for rain this afternoon with a high near 61. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 29. Tuesday, sunny with a high near 52. And Wednesday, sunny with a high around 71.
Thanks to everyone who has supported AM 950 by becoming members. We've appreciated all the kind notes and comments, and we're committed to getting through this and supporting our community. We could still use some help getting memberships, though, as we know we're still a long way from getting through this pandemic. Go to am950radio.com to purchase your membership today.
If you're looking to save money on your home or building improvement project, check out Better Futures Minnesota's reuse retail warehouse in South Minneapolis. We carry salvaged building materials such as cabinetry, flooring, plumbing fixtures, appliances, lighting, and more, saving you money and saving the planet by keeping these items out of the landfill, by giving them another life. Selections change daily, and we also take donations. Go to betterfuturesminnesota.com and look under Reuse Warehouse to learn more. Let us know AM 950 sent you.
And we're back on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson, AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. So Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, as well as Dean Phillips, our representative in the 3rd District of Minnesota, he's at least been tweeting about this, and as I mentioned, Schumer and Pelosi have been touting some new benefits that Democrats have won and concessions that they've been able to get from CARES. I'm not sure, again, whether to call this CARES Part 2 or the CARES Act Part 1.5. Either way, there's going to be another stimulus bill that's going to be passed. So what's being touted by Pelosi and Schumer and also our local representative Dean Phillips is, well, what they say are some new benefits that they've won from Republicans. That includes $300 million more for personal protection equipment. Also, small business forgivable loan programs getting additional funding. $50 billion for disaster loans for small businesses. And then $75 billion more for hospitals to defray costs. $25 billion for surge testing. So those are all the benefits they supposedly won in negotiations with Republicans. Now, there's something that's very wrong with that. How are those Democratic priorities and not bipartisan issues? That doesn't strike me as being a win for a political party to be able to get $50 billion in additional funding for disaster loans for small businesses or an additional $25 billion for surge testing. I mean, it's certainly good. Those are in the bills. But how are those concessions in terms of negotiations?
Especially against the party who claims to be all about businesses and everything. But really, you know, they're not about businesses. They're about large corporations with lots of money. They couldn't care less about the small businesses.
Yeah, and you're certainly right from the Republican perspective that, yeah, they – looks like they don't support any of those things. But the problem I have with the Democratic side is that they're pushing these off as wins in negotiations. These aren't victories or wins. If you're going to negotiate on these types of things, I would be asking for Well, I don't know what I'd necessarily be asking for. Maybe expanded Medicare and Medicaid to help people deal with these types of things. Not just asking for basic needs and then passing that off as being a win when it comes to negotiations. Those should be basic bipartisan aspects of the bill, and yet you have Democratic leaders passing this off as being a win. And going back to what Sam said, yeah, you're certainly right that yeah, the Republicans, it's shameful on their part to not be supporting these types of provisions in the bills. But the Democrats certainly deserve some criticism as well for trying to pass these off as being wins.
It just gets me because what you're saying with the Dems too, it's like you're going to claim that as a win against the party that. That shouldn't be a win. If the Republicans mm-hmm. claim they're about business, you can use that so easily. This shouldn't have even been a win. This should have been done long time ago. And like you said, something expanded Medicare, which, I mean, in my opinion,
also I'm just thinking off the top of my head what you could use as a negotiating ploy, but you could be asking for a lot more than that rather than just basic needs as your negotiating ploy. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. And to Republicans' credit, they're much better at negotiating than Democrats. It's a lot easier to negotiate with someone if who you're negotiating with immediately backs down and just puts basic premises in the bill and then considers that to be a victory. So, yeah, that's what we're apparently going to be getting in CARES 1.5 or CARES Act Part 2, depending on what exactly you want to call that. We're going to move on to the phone lines before I move on to a couple of non-COVID-related stories because I don't really want to transition back to a COVID-related story. So let's go to Randy in St. Cloud who wants to chime in on what we've been talking about with CARES 1.5 or CARES 0.2 or CARES Act 3, whatever we want to call this bill. Randy, yeah. What do you think?
we could call it Orwell.
Yeah.
Comes to the new century. Well, I got so much to say. First off, these clowns are not the resistance. And it really drives me nuts that Dean Phillips has joined Schumer and Pelosi. They're the assistants. They're not the resistance. And
good term.
That Dean campaigned as a progressive. He would be right of Dave Durenberger. That shows you how old I am. Dave mm-hmm. Durenberger was a very moderate Republican.
By the way, currently reading his book, When Republicans Were Progressive. And yeah, continue, Randy. Isn't that unbelievable that that we've had a book written even with that title?
Yeah. Well, and that right now, Ronald Reagan wouldn't be allowed in the party.
No.
In the Republican Party. So, but the whole thing when you were talking about the fraud and the BS that's going to happen, and I get constant emails from Dean Phillips about I fought hard to get some accountability into this bill. Oh, you shut up! No, you didn't. There's no accountability, and the guy they put in charge, Trump, fired the first day. So big deal. So there is no accountability. There's trillions going out. And we just got, not that long ago, we had a story that broke the Afghan papers. Mm-hmm. And when I was younger, there was the Pentagon papers, and it was a huge deal. It shook everything up. This is a bigger deal. It's a war that's been ongoing for two decades. I have kids that weren't born when it started. So... And that just got trillions of dollars got thrown away, and all of the military people said, we don't have any idea what we're doing. We don't know who the enemy is. We don't know who the good guys are. We don't know what we're supposed to do here. And we're still have troops there. And then they say, well, these welfare cheats. Rick Scott is a senator from the state of Florida, was the governor, used to be the head of a health care company, and they were convicted of fraud. He was not. They paid a huge fine, but he didn't admit any wrongdoing. But it was one of the largest welfare frauds. They ripped off Medicaid. tons of money. That guy's still worth $250 million, and he's a senator. And we can't figure out what's wrong. Oh, my God. We need, if we don't just shake this whole thing up and throw all these clowns out, this blue no matter who. Yeah, right. That's going
to
help.
All right, Randy. Appreciate the phone call. We'll have to leave it there. And going back to this, these so-called wins that Democrats say they got from this CARES 1.5 or CARES Part 2 Act. Now, I get the argument that, well, they weren't going to be able to win anything like an expansion of Medicare or Medicaid or an expansion of Social Security benefits. I certainly get it. Yeah, you're not going to get those type of provisions through a Republican Senate, let alone a Republican president. But you should at least be putting that out on the forefront that you were fighting for those types of things to be in the bill. If you just set this off as being, well, our only benefits are just making sure we're having proper funding for personal protection equipment and for small business loans, that doesn't really do a whole lot to really fire people up to vote for your type of party. Put that to the forefront that you're trying to expand benefits for, like I'm just throwing out Medicare or Social Security or whatever other programs. Make that a priority when you're talking about these negotiations with Republicans, because what you want as concessions aren't really concessions whatsoever. All right, coming up on the other side of the break, going to talk about a couple of non-COVID-related topics. Then want to get to that Joe Biden poll I saw released over the weekend that so far I found is one of the most interesting and insightful polls that I've seen released in the 2020 election cycle. We'll get to all of that coming up next.
Hi, this is Laura. These are indeed confusing times. So much of our life, education, business, meetings have moved online, yet not everyone has internet access. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, is here for everyone. Radio reaches people without internet. In fact, radio reaches more Americans than any other platform. 92% of U.S. adults listen to radio every week. Radio connects. If you know some organization, maybe a religious or civic group, seeking to engage and knows that a Zoom call costs money and does not reach everyone, consider a taped or live broadcast on AM 950. Perhaps a virtual not-so-silent auction, recovery support, spiritual support, business networking, poetry slam. If you want to learn more about creating a live or taped message on AM 950, call 952-946-8885 or email Laura at am950radio.com. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, here for everyone.
A comfortable home means more now than ever. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning can help you save up to $2,700 when you buy a new energy-efficient furnace and AC in April. Find out more about this deal and their no-contact protocol at standardheating.com.
Minuteman Press Uptown is still open. It's printing everything. But they are taking some extra precautions. You can order by phone or online and do curbside pickup. Plus, they can help restaurants staying open with direct mail and geofencing. That's Minuteman Press Uptown.
Hi, everyone. Matt McNeil here. With coronavirus, I hope you're holding up well. Thanks for keeping your radio tuned to AM 950. This is a challenging time for everyone, including us here at AM 950. Right now, it's so important to keep AM 950 on the air, ensuring a progressive radio voice is in Minnesota for the 2020 election cycle. The best in progressive talk lives here with Tom Hartman, Stephanie Miller, Brad Freeman, and of course the local hosts like Brett Johnson, Robert Pilot, and myself. To make sure AM 950 keeps broadcasting, we need your financial support now. Head over to am950radio.com and sign up to support with however much you can. Your assistance will help keep AM 950 on the air. And Brett and I will be personally thanking listeners who contribute on our shows. Head over to am950radio.com. That's am950radio.com. Declare, yes, I want to support AM 950. From everyone here at AM 950 and from me personally, thank you very much. And thanks for listening to the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake would like to say Pini Gigi for all your support these last 3 years. We discuss national and local Native news and events. Weekly correspondents bring us updates and information from all over Turtle Island.
Native Roots Radio I'm Awake is supported by Robbins Kaplan, LLP, dedicated to redefining high-stakes litigation representation in Indian country.
Saturdays live 1 to 3. Free Leonard Peltier.
By the way, if you missed it last night, Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio debuted yet another program. Man, that guy is so busy. He's just putting out a lot of great content, not only over the airwaves on AM 950, but he's very involved with lots of Native American groups and activist groups. He debuted another new show last night at 10 o'clock. It's called Native Roots Radio Presents We're Still Here. Airs from 10 till midnight. We'll be airing that for the next few weeks and months as we make our way through the COVID-19 pandemic. By the way, it's not a live broadcast. It's taped from 2 hours earlier, the live broadcast. If you want to watch that, Robert Pilot with Native Roots Radio Presents We're Still Here. They have that live airing from 7 until 9 on their Facebook page, but then we air it here on the airwaves from 10 until midnight. But certainly, Robert Pilot, very talented broadcaster, very busy guy, doing a great job getting you all sorts of good information here on AM 950. So let's get to a couple of non-COVID-19 related stories, and this relates to something that happened on Saturday night in Mendota Heights. And being that I used to live in this area, I'm guessing this probably happened on what used to be Highway 110, but I think is now Highway 62. So more than 100 street racers were sighted on Saturday night in Mendota Heights, in the same spot where a police officer was struck and injured by a racer last year. Now, the reason I'm bringing up this story is that the police chief of Mendota Heights made some comments that were a little unsettling about these street racers. Police Chief Kelly McCarthy said, "The racing is nothing new and happens every year," and here's Kelly's quote, "They drive recklessly, the neighbors complain, and it's alarming," she said, noting that she, though, does not view the racers as being bad guys. She says, quote, "I kind of feel for them. I know they put a lot of time and money into their vehicles, but the traffic laws need to be followed," unquote. And I'm sorry, just saying that, oh, I don't want to view these guys as the bad guys. I know they put a lot of money into their vehicles. If these guys that were, I'm assuming you're guys that are racing in these cars late at night, if they were, let's say, poor minority drivers, I'm imagining they probably would not be getting the same response from the police. And then, by the way, this brings back another story I remember from a few years ago, how we had exotic cars that were weaving their way through 394 at speeds over 100 miles per hour. And how it turns out these guys that drove these cars basically got off with no fines whatsoever, didn't end up getting their cars impounded at all. Again, imagine if we had that same attitude that apparently they have over there in Mendota Heights regarding these guys, of saying, well, you know, I kind of feel for them. They put a lot of money into their cars. It still doesn't give you any excuse to be driving recklessly on these roads, especially in an area where an officer was killed a few years ago in this same location. So, yeah, it kind of bugs me there with those comments being made about these guys. I mean, treat them like any other criminal. Arrest these guys, impound their cars, fine them if we're going to be holding people who commit petty crimes, like, let's say, stealing a few dollars from a cash register. If we're going to be putting people like that in prison for years and years, you should be holding that same standard to rich guys who are out there holding street races and trying to pretend they're Vin Diesel late at night and putting a lot of folks in danger. Another story, this is one that kind of hits home for me, being that I'm someone who loves to go out and bike. But the state legislature a few years ago appropriated some money to create this new trail that would run from the old Bloomington Ferry Bridge, which is near Highway 169 in the Bloomington-Eden Prairie area, and it would run along the Minnesota River all the way over to the old Cedar Avenue Bridge, which is located in East Bloomington. Now, currently, there already is an off-road bike trail that runs from the old Bloomington Ferry Bridge over to the old Cedar Avenue Bridge, but the funding from the state legislature would pave this trail so road bikes would be able to use it. Now, the funding has dried up, and so far they've only paved about 2 miles of the 12 that they need for this entire trail, so thus far it's a trail that leads to nowhere. But while I'm generally in favor of creating new bike trails, being that I'm a biker myself and I think it's a great way to get outside, there's a couple of problems with trying to pave this trail. And the biggest one is this. If you've seen this mountain bike trail that currently runs from the Bloomington Ferry Bridge out to the Cedar Avenue Bridge, it literally runs right next to the river. And think about the problems you might have with paving this trail. It's going to be underwater for probably half the year. And I'm not sure if you've seen a pavement that gets flooded frequently, but that pavement doesn't necessarily hold up real well. Good example would be the current trail that runs near the Bloomington Ferry Bridge. This is a paved trail that, if you remember old County Road 18, some of our older residents and older listeners might remember this, when County Road 18 used to be the only road that would cross the Minnesota River in the Bloomington Eden Prairie area. This was before 169 was built. County Road 18 used to cross the river and then run down towards Shakopee. Now, once 169 was built, the old County Road 18 was turned into a bike trail. And of course, like the old road, it goes near the river. Now, the problem, however, is that it's basically underwater half the year. And since I started biking in the mid-2000s, I've seen that pavement deteriorate pretty rapidly every year to the point where parts of that trail are unrideable right now. So now we're apparently going to be trying to turn this very beautiful mountain biking trail. I've talked to some people who have taken this mountain biking trail before, and apparently it's very scenic, very beautiful. But if we're going to be paving this thing and then having it underwater for half the year, you're going to be spending a lot of money on maintenance to make sure that pavement is still passable. So, yeah, like I said, while I'm generally in favor of creating new bike trails, this one might not be the best idea. You also have a number of actual mountain bike groups as well that are very much against turning this into a paved trail. All right, final story for today. Got to bring up this poll regarding Joe Biden. This, I think, is the most interesting poll I've seen in the 2020 election cycle. So NBC News, Wall Street Journal just put out a poll that found voters who have a negative opinion of both Donald Trump and Joe Biden overwhelmingly prefer Joe Biden to Donald Trump, 60% to 10%, which is a really fascinating number. Again, that's among people who have a negative opinion of both Trump and Joe Biden. Biden ends up winning 60 percentage points to 10 percentage points. And the reason I find that interesting is that I'd have to go back and do a little bit more research, but I would love to know what that type of survey would have shown back in 2016. Because I would imagine if you go back to the 2016 election cycle, if you were to ask people how they voted who have both a negative opinion of Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, I would imagine that would be pretty close to a 50-50 split to maybe even having Donald Trump lead in that category. So this might be some good news for Biden if he's leading 60 to 10 among voters who don't like either Trump or Biden. Again, I'd like to go back to 2016 and see what previous polls would show among people who didn't like either of the candidates, who they ended up supporting in the 16 election cycle. All right, that's all the time I got for today. Stay tuned. We got Matt McNeil coming up next on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.